We present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the news quiz. We start with an advertisement for a hedge trimmer, read by Diana Speed.
A built-in safety switch prevents accidental starting, and the blades will stop when you take one hand off.
And our thanks to Roger Harris for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, David Mitchell and Andy Hamilton. And opposite them on my left, Jeremy Hardy and Rebecca Front. David, have a listen to this. Here come the girls. David, what's now made of sugar and spice and all things nice?
The cabinet.
Yes.
David Cameron has made sort of good-ish on his promise to sometimes give some jobs to women, although nowhere near as many as he said he would, and put some women in the cabinet. But what he's mainly done is demoted Michael Gove, which... I think on the strength of which, as you can hear, he'll probably win the next election. And I think the mission in politics now is, because people have long since stopped respecting politicians, so they've accepted that and they're just trying to be entertaining. And so Cameron's saying, what's the most entertaining thing you can do? Well, not sack Michael Gove, because then he could get angry about it, but if you demote him, he has to humiliatingly claim to be honoured at the demotion. He has to smile through the pain. And we're a sadistic country and we enjoy seeing that humiliation. And then to add to the entertainment, Gove, I think today, on the first day as Chief Whip, got stuck in the loos at the House of Commons. This is a tremendous move for the Conservatives. And could almost eclipse the electoral power of the sight of Ed Miliband trying to eat a bacon sandwich, which up to now was the most entertaining thing in British politics. So I think we can look forward to a very funny year ahead.
He said this rather extraordinary thing, though, Gove, when I think immediately after he'd been made Chief Whip, and the quote was, whether it's a demotion, emotion or locomotion, it's exciting. And I thought, well, given the choice of those three, I would go for demotion, because the others are just mad.
But all three of those words, demotion, emotion, locomotion, you clearly can't tell the difference between a sacking, a feeling and a Kylie Minogue song. I mean, it was...
It's actually Little Eva. You're showing how young you are, and I don't think Little Eva would have done a song called Do the Unwanted Move to the Position of Chief Whip.
His role is described by Cameron as enhanced. Mm. It was enhanced to the tune of 36 grand less in salary, and of course he's the Chief Whip, so he's got all the normal functions of the Chief Whip. You know, he's got to maintain party discipline, protect paedophiles, blackmail MPs, all that day-to-day stuff. But he's also apparently been given a role as Minister for TV. Well, he's going to go on TV a lot because Cameron thinks Michael Gove is good on TV.
No, but I like watching Gove on TV. And, you know, it's like the bits of Blue Planet where you see some weird fish that lives under the Arctic ice shelf and can't see because it's got a parasite perpetually living on its eye fluids. And that's like, and yeah, sure, you want to be sick, but also you keep watching. And that's how I feel about Gove.
And then you want to see the making of bit where the cameraman spends weeks in a tent waiting for him to do something sane or reasonable.
But he is astonishing. I mean, he alienated the teaching unions. That is ridiculous. Those are people who can win round with an apple. I mean...
Of course, the other person who's going to be going on TV a lot is Esther McFaye.
Oh, yes.
Who is going to be going on TV a lot to defend government policies between now and the election. And she probably thinks that this proves that she's a rising star. But all it really proves is that she's expendable. Because that's what it'd be. She'll be a human shield. She'll be cannon fodder. Because she'll have to go on every time they need someone to explain away the latest cock-up. She's going to get a lot of late-night phone calls along the lines of, listen, Esther, the minister's a bit too busy to go on Newsnight and talk about the 24 dead orphans they found buried in his garden. Do you mind just popping along to Newsnight and explaining to Kirsty Walk that it's all a storm in a teacup? That's going to be her role.
But the thing that's extraordinary about her, she's a former daytime television presenter and she's now the employment minister. It's so ironic that she's now squarely targeting the very people who used to watch her.
The education woman, Nicky Morgan, is also women's minister or ladies' ministeress. She was minister for women and equalities, but they had to take the equalities bit out because she's opposed to equal marriage.
She's still equalities minister.
She's still equalities minister,
but somebody else is dealing with same-sex marriage. So she's absolutely in charge of equality, but not quite for everybody. Can we just discuss the coverage of the women? Can we just have a quick discussion
about
that?
Well, I think the Mail was excellent. Because nowhere in the Mail did it say that surely these ladies are all going to faint after spending all day practising sitting on a horse sideways.
I, for one, wanted to know what they all wore
exactly.
And where they got their shoes
exactly.
from.
Exactly, you want to know how big their briefs are, don't you?
Didn't the Mail say about all but one of them, oh, what a horrible, great big bag she's got with all her stuff in it, how inelegant. And then one had a tiny bag and said, what a ridiculous tiny clutch bag. Take yourself seriously, you've got a proper job now. And you sort of go, exactly what size of bag is acceptable? You know, it's very precise, 31.2 centimetres, and the Mail will shut up about your bag. Either way, and it's too big or it's too small. You're a horrible, ugly, big-bagged woman, or you're a prostitute with a tiny bag.
The main story for the Mail seems to be that women were capable of wearing dresses and walking on their hind legs like a proper person. I mean, it's extraordinary.
Yeah, the accusation seemed to be that they looked presentable.
Yeah. I quite like the expression pale, stale and male, because there was a lot of talk about the reshuffle, getting rid of the fusty old white men from the cabinet. And I thought, but that's because that's all it was to start with. If you got rid of any of them, you'd be getting rid of fusty old white men. It's like expecting praise for taking the dusty orange ones out of a bag of Watsits. I mean, it was...
I thought it was very funny the way he suddenly discovered women. Suddenly, and so near election time. Who would have thought? He suddenly thought, I'll get the little ladies in, they can persuade all the other little ladies to vote for me. And it's suddenly discovered how jolly useful they are. They can do everything. They're like sort of Swiss Army knives in human form.
But he didn't go that far in his thinking about it, because Penny Mordaunt, she was the person who took part in that ITV show Splash, and she's been made Coastal Communities Minister. Cameron going, water, something's with water. Give her something to do. She's fine with water.
They won't be able to do anything because there's not going to be any legislation between now and the election.
No. I mean, Elizabeth Truss, she's been made Secretary of State for Food so that Nick Clegg's got somebody to help him with a tea run, I think. I think it's...
if this is all, which is clearly a propaganda drive, because all they're doing is fighting the next election, they're not interested in the country at all, then presumably all their broadcasts, all the party election broadcasts and party political broadcasts will all be like sort of wartime propaganda films with all the lady ministeresses saying, hello, housewives, at this time of austerity, there's much you could do to make do. Instead of using chewing gum, use the elastic from your knickers and chew that.
The other note of comedy that appeared in a lot of the coverage was, of course, because William Hague was leaving, they all played that clip of him as a 16-year-old, you know, saying, it's all right for some of you. He said, most of you won't be here in 40 years' time. I thought, well, that's ironic, actually, because you're not going to be there either.
Following Prime Minister David Cameron's reshuffle, the cabinet now contains more...
Is he still the Prime Minister after the reshuffle?
Following Prime Minister David Cameron's reshuffle, the cabinet now contains more women than any previous Conservative-led government. The move is widely seen as Cameron's attempt to spring into action and make the party more electable now that women have the vote. Wide-ranging shuffle has seen the removal of the male, pale and stale, which was coincidentally the working title for Top Gear. William Hague leaves his post as Foreign Secretary and former Education Secretary Michael Gove has been demoted to Chief Whip. Ironic, since whips were the next draconian system he planned to bring into schools. 2 points to David. Andy, listen to this. Here come the girls. Andy, whose hymns are going to be hers?
The Church of England has finally looked at the calendar and noticed the century. They've gone, good Lord, is it 2014 already? Feels like only yesterday it was the Synod of Whitby. They're bringing in women bishops. They may even pay them the same as the men, you never know.
Wow.
So women have finally broken through the stained glass ceiling. You know, it is great news. Of course, there were, you know, dissidents who started moaning, saying it's against the word of God as expressed in the Bible. Which is odd, because when I started Old Harry's Game, I actually read the whole Bible as research. I don't remember any mention of women bishops. In fact, there aren't many women at all in the Bible. And the few that there are, they're not really women, they're just sort of types. There's the seductive harlot who demands severed heads as payment for dancing services type. There's the octogenarian lady who miraculously and a little selfishly has a baby. There's the foolish woman who ignores God's commands and turns to salt.
This is loose women that you're type. Describing.
Yeah, it is. None of those are modern types of women, but a female bishop is, so I mean that's good news. Hopefully that's really broken the mold. We have female bishops, female archbishop, female pope, maybe even a female president of a golf club.
Wow. Now you're just dreaming.
Well, I mean, there has been a female pope.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah,
yeah. She was called Pope Joan, which was a bit of a giveaway, really, because it's a girl's name. So I'm surprised you didn't spot it.
Allegedly, the way they discovered that, in fact, she was a woman, was that she gave birth during a service, which I think would certainly give you a clue that...
When a new pope is sworn in, they have to check his...
They do. They have a special chair. He has to sit on the chair, naked, and they check his genitals.
To make sure that he's not the ghost of Pope Joan.
Yeah.
So someone sitting under the chair, then? How does this chair work?
It's got a hole in the chair.
So someone has to lie under
it's
the chair.
It's a commode.
Yeah, you're all right.
It's there like... is a way... I'm sure there's a way of determining the sex of a human without a special chair. I mean,
it's a bit like servicing a Ford Cortina, I think. You've got to get... But, I mean, 2,000 years, seeing as God created the world in 6 days, you do feel they've been dragging their feet ever so slowly.
I think the churches will be more fragrant, incense will be much nicer, there'll be popery everywhere, which will make room for reconciliation with the Catholic Church.
Did you know this? I didn't know this at all. Apparently there are already over 20 female Anglican bishops, but they are outside of the Church of England. Did you know? I don't know what they're doing, loitering.
How can you be an Anglican
freelance?
There's, I don't know.
Are they schisming? Is that a schism?
Offering people christenings free of halitosis and beard dandruff. I have no idea. The Church of England's General Synod has voted overwhelmingly in favour of appointing women bishops. The motion was first passed by the House of Bishops, followed by the House of Clergy, and then the House of Laity. The House of Fraser abstained because it's having a mid-season sale. The move is seen as a great step forward for bishops. Previously, they could only move diagonally. Two points to Andy. Jeremy, what rush turned into a drip?
Now, I'm trying to remember the acronym. It's basically spying nonsense. It's the data...
Retention
and interception...
And investigatory powers bill.
Powers bill, which is, yeah, that thing. It's drip. And it's basically, it's the rolling forward of the powers of repression in our society. Now, a couple of months ago, I happened to meet Shami Chakrabarty, and we were talking about political events of the late 1980s, and she said to me the words, "Now, Jeremy, you're probably too young to remember this." Now, because she said that, from now on, anything that she says is all right by me. So, she is against this, I'm against it. Basically, it's rolling forward the powers of the state, which would be fine. If the state wants more powers, they can have the railways back. We'd like you to run the railways. The coffee will be rubbish, the shopping experience won't be quite as grabby, but at least it will be safer, cheaper and more efficient. Take the Royal Mail back with no compensation if the state wants more powers, but just get out of our private lives. And there's all these people that say, if you've got nothing to hide, you've got nothing to worry about. Well, you know, on that basis, you could say, well, you don't need doors on toilet cubicles unless you're up to no good in there. All these people say, well, I've got nothing to hide. All right, strip down to your bra and pants and walk through the... Well, actually, no, don't do that. But what I mean is, we've all got stuff to hide, you know, and even if it's not egregious, why should it be exposed? And, you know, the whole point is that we're not under suspicion. And people say, well, if you've got nothing to hide, don't worry about it. We might as well say, well, we don't need courts if you haven't done anything wrong, when the police won't put you in prison. But the fact is, sometimes the state gets things wrong. And they're saying, we're keeping you safe. Do you know what? We'll take the risk. You know, life isn't always safe.
But it was the speed, Jeremy. It was the speed boat that it was put through. The House of Lords was only given 2 days to debate the bill. I mean, that's not even long enough to get everybody's hearing aids on the same frequency. So.
I think the Daily Mail's got their headline for tomorrow morning. We've all got stuff to hide, admits BBC comedian. It's not the government's job to invade our digital privacy. That's why we have Google.
It sounds like some new modern technology, but it says here the new law will oblige telecom companies to retain a log of its clients' calls, a record of numbers called, and a record of how many calls are made to those numbers. I call that a phone bill, and it's available on paper. We don't need all modern technology for it.
They can come and take your computer away, and it's got all the stuff in there. And they do that. I mean, they're arresting people all the time.
They'll bring it back, Jim, don't worry. You'll be fine.
Listen, if they can take it away and make it work properly, that's absolutely fine with me.
The Data Retention and Investigatory Powers Bill has been rushed through its parliamentary stages in just 3 days, reinstating data surveillance powers that were overturned by the European Court of Justice back in April. The bill is shortened to DRIP, just as our rights to privacy have been shortened to none. The Home Office insisted it was left with no other choice than to use emergency legislation to whisk the DRIP bill through in 3 days after the European ruling a mere 94 days ago. Critics claim we could have used the 3 months since the April ruling to have a proper debate about surveillance in Parliament, or at least that's what their emails said. 2 points to Jeremy. Rebecca, who's trying to woo the voters by being better in the spare bedroom?
The bedroom tax, which isn't actually a tax at all, but is a restriction of housing benefit, was a very controversial measure that the coalition brought in, supported by the Lib Dems. But now, Danny Alexander, for the Lib Dems, has said that it's time to change the approach. And he's done this for very altruistic reasons, that there is an election coming up. And for the same reasons, he chose to do this by announcing it in the popular press rather than by actually talking to his coalition partners about it first. So, consequently, they, of course... I mean, it will never go through, presumably, and then they get all the benefit and everybody thinks how lovely they are because they were the ones who quibbled with it, having actually put it through in the first place. It seems a little transparent, if I'm honest.
But I mean, also, we can sort of see through it. Nick Clegg has demanded that the tax be axed. And you think... Nick Clegg with an axe. It's not a very intimidating picture, is it? I mean, it's not very Jack Nicholson in The Shining. It's more like, I don't know, that little wooden chap who pops out of a cuckoo clock. I mean, it's...
I think the Lib Dems are trying to return to what they're used to and what they used to enjoy a little bit early. That their whole MO was essentially to demand things and to say it should be like this and to, you know, people to sort of go, oh, well, that sounds relatively sensible, but... then they're ignored because they haven't got a chance of power. And then, now they've had this chance of power. They've made a terrible mess of it. They've completely compromised all of their principles. For example, this tax that they claim not to agree with, that, you know, it wouldn't happen without them. But they're saying, oh, come on, it's nearly the election. Surely we can start a bit early, being the irrelevant Lib Dems, vaguely saying nice, middle-of-the-road things that you can broadly get behind. It doesn't matter if you can't, because they're never going to happen. But the thing is, he's got to wait. Poor old Danny Alexander and Nick Clegg will be all right. They will lose the election. They will be absolutely eclipsed. And then they can start, you know, generally chatting away about these irrelevancies and being ignored like they used to enjoy before 2010. It's been a disastrous experiment for them having any power at all. They've hated it more even than the country. And soon it will be over.
But they'll be in the next government. They'll probably be in the next government, no matter who doesn't win it. They will be, even if they've only got one MP left. And so,
it's like an awful anxiety dream for them then, isn't it? If you're right, and I'm sure you are right, yeah. It must just be horrible. The thought that, oh no, we're in power again. This is a nightmare. What are we going to do now?
They must have looked at themselves after 2010 and thought, this isn't why I became a Lib Dem.
So far, this Parliament, the Lib Dems have had 6 chances to vote against the bedroom tax and not used a single one of them. What the hell is going on? Do you think that Nick Clegg has suddenly woken up and gone, hang on a minute, nobody trusts us, I better do something? Yeah. They're talking about it being a dramatic U-turn. I love this phrase. It sounds like something, I don't know, Judy Dench would do on her driving test. I mean, it's just...
The thing is, it's not a U-turn at all because they're not at the wheel.
Oh, yeah,
it's them sitting in the back going, I don't think we should go this way.
The Liberal Democrats have announced that they no longer support the bedroom tax in its present form after a Department of Work and Pensions report show that the measures haven't worked and many of those affected are in arrears. The Lib Dems are hoping to reform the law so that anyone with a spare room will have to use it to house a Lib Dem ex-MP after the next election. Lib Dems have been polling at their lowest since 2001 at just 6%, which is accounted for by Nick Clegg's family and people who didn't understand the form. 2 points to Rebecca. At the end of round one, the scores are David and Andy have got 4 points, but so too have Jeremy and Rebecca. We start round two with a cutting from the Somerset County Gazette.
A mum who says she was barred from breastfeeding her baby at a health spa near Taunton has been offered a free colonic irrigation as a goodwill gesture.
I bet she said, well, you know where you can stick that, don't you?
And our thanks to Liz Jones for sending us that. David, who might be reverting to type?
The Germans.
Mm.
And I'm not referring to as another attempt to take over the rest of Europe, although, you know, we all live in fear of that. But no, they're very cross that the Americans have been spying on them. And once again, I'm sorry, I get most of my history and indeed current affairs from war films, so this may sound a bit dated, but I can't get too upset by people spying on the Germans. I'm sorry, I just can't get behind it. I can accept that it may not actually be morally right, but still, I'm never going to lose any sleep over it. There's been a suggestion that they're going to eschew all forms of modern technology and the internet and computers and mobile phones and just use typewriters, which actually, in the news report I read, a typewriter looked very much like the Enigma machine, but I'll leave it at that. So they're going to just type things and then, I don't know, post them, take them round. You know, the new law in the German parliament, we've just typed it. Is the photocopier safe? I'm not sure. Just pass it round.
I think the mistake they've been making is that... The thing is, I've also seen the same war films as David. And what German people do is, instead of speaking German, they speak English but in a German accent. So if they would speak their own language, then we, the Allies, we wouldn't be able to understand them and they could carry on with their nefarious plots to take over the world.
But apparently, as well as the typewriters, they're now encouraging their spies to do the old-fashioned thing of going for a walk in the park to have their conversation. Do you think that they're also doing that thing with the newspapers with the two holes for eyes?
I think they should bring back all the old espionage skills. Because, like, Kim Philby... He used to leave his missives to his KGB controller in a hole in a tree on Hampstead Heath. Isn't that fantastic? Like nature's inbox. Just drop it in the tree. I think they should... I mean, I think they're onto something because, you know, there's no doubt that the new technologies are very vulnerable to interception. I mean, imagine if Edward Snowden, he downloaded billions of secret emails in, like, probably took him about 30 seconds. Imagine if he'd had to individually photocopy all of it. It would have taken him centuries.
That's a long time.
Yeah. Even if he'd had one of those really whizzo photocopiers, you know, the sorts as you do it. It would never...
Although one of the upsides to using a typewriter is that you never have to go near a printer, and that's surely got to add 5 years to your life. Yeah.
But equally, you were saying that he could download millions and millions of emails in a matter of seconds. Not if he was using my broadband provider, he couldn't. So maybe that's another option.
Well, they could keep using computers, but fool spies into thinking they're using typewriters by shouting ding every time they've typed a sentence.
I think that'd be a good law. Spies, they've got to wear trench coats, they've got to have poison umbrellas. And you know where you are.
Do you remember that?
That's the thing, you don't know where you are with spies.
Do you remember that wonderful story about the Americans? They trained a cat to spy for them. They implanted a device in this cat, and its tail, they implanted the antenna. And they were going to have it walk through a Moscow park where they knew that two spies were often sitting on a bench having a conversation. And they spent, I think, upwards of $1 million creating this kitty. And the very first day that Kitty was set out on patrol, it ran into the street and was hit by a car. German politicians are considering a return to using manual typewriters for sensitive documents to guard against foreign surveillance. The news comes off the back of worries about Americans spying in Germany. Traditionally, the Germans have written all their correspondence in a sort of code known as German. Using a typewriter means the messages cannot be intercepted online. It also has the added advantage of being able to pretend you're in Murder, She Wrote. I love that programme. Angela Lansbury.
Just right. only 2,000 well-crafted episodes. It was...
She lived in, how dangerous was it?
Yeah,
Cabot Cove. I mean, people just dropping like flies.
By that last series, she was just sitting there alone.
Yeah. Two points to David. Andy, who is looking for a place in the country because they need more space?
Ooh. Oh, is this space tourism?
It's about space.
Yeah, they're going to fire tourists into space in rockets, which is often what I want to do when I'm walking up Oxford Street. And I think if I could strap a rocket to... they're gonna open these spaceports in Scotland or Cornwall or somewhere expendable. And they're also going to send lots of satellites into the atmosphere. There's a lot of money in that. It's going to create a lot of wealth. It will make our infrastructure more vulnerable to Ming the Merciless. So I'm not sure they thought it entirely.
I've seen
through.
The film Gravity, and as I understand it, getting back safely from space depends on how good you look in your pants. If you look good in your pants, you'll probably survive.
That's another Daily Mail headline.
But this you said about the places. There's 8 proposed sites. There's Cornwall, Wales and Scotland. So instead of 24 hours on a plane from Heathrow, you can spend 24 hours on an A road getting to the getting to the spaceport.
Yeah, and all you'll do is you'll get on a plane, you go up, you only go to the very edge of space. You don't go far enough to meet any sexy green alien women. You just go to the edge of space, you're a bit weightless, you probably throw up, and then you land again. That's
it. Sorry, just going to stop you on the sexy green alien women. Do you just want to tell us where that thought came from? I just...
Well, that's Star Trek, isn't it?
Oh, are they?
Star Trek, they're always sexy green alien women. Oh, come on, Sandy. You can't tell me.
Yeah, that's what we know from fiction about space, is that when you get to a certain point, you start to meet people who look like humans who spend about 3 hours in makeup.
Don't wear a lot of clothing.
And then you try and get off with them.
But this is why we don't equate the British with high-tech space exploration, because our best-known sci-fi hero flies around the galaxy in an antiquated phone box.
But I think it's a very good thing, though, that we've started in Britain with the element of space travel that we know we can handle, which is the spaceport on Earth.
Yeah.
That's fine. You just have... OK, we need a waiting room, we need maybe a cafe, a restaurant, a runway.
Duty-free.
Yeah, duty-free, probably at some tellies on the walls showing sci-fi. You know, this we can handle. And we'll worry about the spaceship later. Just get the spaceport just right, and then we'll invent the spaceship. Because, as Andy says, they're not planning to have a spaceship.
No, there isn't actually a working one yet.
No, what they want is an aeroplane that goes extremely high for an aeroplane.
Yeah.
So high that it gets a bit dark. Well, you know, you could just, you know, take a flight at night, and you get that effect. We know what they mean by a spaceship. Yeah. It's a thing you can beam up into, and it goes to other planets in a matter of hours, and interesting planets, not solar system planets, which are too hot to stand on or too cold to stand on, and there's nothing there. We want planets with, like, a bit of jungle or a bit of some pyramids with weird people with antenna. You know, this proper space.
Yeah.
Now, we can't do that yet, but we can do a lovely departure lounge.
Yeah. Aviation Minister Robert Goodwill has announced 8 possible locations for a new UK spaceport. The Business Secretary, Vince Cable, said the space industry contributes £11.3 billion to the UK economy, which, with Vince's track record on estimating the value of businesses like the Royal Mail, means it's worth anywhere between £110 billion and £6.50. 6 of the 8 potential sites are in Scotland, so if Scotland chooses to leave, they can finally distance themselves from the UK by simply jettisoning themselves into space.
Are the Scots going to close off our access to space?
Well, I haven't understood why 6 of them are in Scotland. Surely, I'm not a scientist, but just because you're further north doesn't make you closer to space, does it? It doesn't. Add 2 points to Andy. At the end of round 2, the scores are Jeremy and Rebecca have got 8 points, but David and Andy are in the lead with 9. We start round 3 with a sign spotted in a local hospital.
For the blood tests department, follow red line on floor.
And our thanks to Lo Williams for sending us that. Jeremy, who's not bananas about MASH?
Somebody's done some health stuff. They've tested things on rats or mice, and they've said bananas are all right to eat, but only if you eat them very, very green. Now, green bananas are an ideal substitute for plantain in Afro-Caribbean cooking, but they're horrible if you eat them, like, raw. So what would be the point? Overripe bananas are disgusting, but my dad's 88. He eats very black bananas because that's what you did in those days. You waited until it was oozing and looked like, you know, the poison was gradually seeping out of it, and then you ate it. But according to health, you should only eat it when it's horrible and very, very green and still in the Dominican Republic. And you shouldn't mash your potatoes. Apparently, chips are actually more healthy than mash. And in fact, bacon frazzles have more antioxidants than hummus, it turns out.
They're a superfood, aren't they?
Yeah, bacon frazzles. And Pringles not only make a lovely jumper, but they contain all of your B vitamins.
Did you read this report very late at night?
Basically, you shouldn't mash your potatoes because the act of crushing them somehow releases the sugars out of the starch. Despite the fact that I'm fairly sure that your stomach kind of mashes things up anyway, and your teeth. If you eat a potato using your teeth, don't they sort of mash the potato? And yet somehow the use of a fork and a knob of butter is much
more... Jeremy, don't tell me you're still chewing.
Well, I looked at... I did... In the 70s, I looked at the advice of those robots on the adverts who laughed at us for being backward and said, look at these 20th century fools with their potatoes. In the future, people will eat dust diluted with water. But we carried on mashing potatoes. But seemingly, when you mash a potato, all of the starch turns into sugar and then you immediately contract diabetes and then you just die in pain. Far better that you should just inject a whole potato into your face with the use of a turkey baster than you should eat minted crushed potatoes, which is the new posh mash.
There were lots of things, though. He says you shouldn't cook with olive oil.
Olive oil is good raw, But no, this is
the thing. He says you shouldn't. But he says you shouldn't cook with extra virgin olive oil, which is kind of obvious, really, because it's so expensive.
Yes,
you'd be idiotic to be cooking with extra virgin
oil. You should cook with 3-in-1 oil, really. No, actually, you should cook. Do you know what you should cook with? Butter or lard?
The only time you should use olive oil is when you've got friends over for dinner and you want to pretend you don't just live off Special K.
In the old days, you could only buy olive oil in the chemists.
For blocked ears.
For blocked ears. What you did is you got the bottle and you shoved it inside your head and twisted it around until the cap dislodged your earwax.
I'm going to give an extra point if anybody can name some of the foods that have been revealed this week that adults refuse to try in this country. Does anybody know what any of those foods are?
Asparagus was one.
Extra
Brussels sprout some people managed to avoid.
Really?
That's because they put crosses in them to ward off the devil.
Do you know what top of the bill was?
Asparagus.
No, it was oysters, which are pretty delicious, although, to be fair, I suppose it's not like KFC, you do a bucket of them, but...
Hattie Hayridge had a brilliant joke about oysters. She says they're a wonderful aphrodisiac because if you can swallow an oyster...
people do not eat enough fish. Apparently, it was one of the big things. They don't eat mackerel, they don't eat oysters and so on. And I was in a seafood restaurant on the Kent coast, and I overheard at the next table, a woman said, "So, which bit of the squid is the scallop?"
Also, omega-3 sounds evil.
It sounds like the one where Captain Kirk had to fight a satanic figure, doesn't it?
Why not call it Alpha-1? That's nice.
You're right. Also, omega-3 sounds like it hasn't got the same production values as omega-1 and 2.
It sounds like omega-1 and 2 did terrible things to people, and you'd worry about they haven't ironed out all the problems with omega-3. It's omega-6 that'll actually be good for you when they've buried all the omega-3, 4 and 5 bodies. As they gradually mutate into mackerel.
This is the shock news that a scientist has said we should only eat healthy foods. Rodney Bilton, a professor of biochemistry at Liverpool John Moores University, has published Know What to Eat, a book of scientifically proven healthy foods. Grinding, heating and chewing food can release sugars, so you'll need to swallow raw potatoes whole. Professor Rodney Bilton also advises against cooking with olive oil. When olive oil is overheated, it can produce toxic lipid peroxides, which will then go on to present loose women. 2 points to Jeremy. Rebecca, why aren't worms legless?
Yes, scientists have developed a genetic mutant alcohol intolerant worm. And... not before time, in my view, because, you know, you only have to go into a town centre on a Friday night to see the havoc that is wreaked by worms. They can't take their drink. They eat rubbish. They poo indiscriminately. They're legless. They crawl home on their bellies, you know, in the early hours. It's disgraceful. It really is. So, anyway...
That's such a brilliant image. Drunken worms hanging around street corners shouting at sparrows.
You want some? You want a piece, yeah? Anyway, so they've now developed this gene that makes the worm intolerant to alcohol. And what they're hoping, I think, is that they can kind of roll this gene out and use it on human beings. And if they can't do that, then they can at least train these worms to befriend the human being and to say, come on, love, I think you've had enough. that's what I think. That's kind of fundamental understanding.
But the idea
story.
Is that they're going to create a drug, isn't it? And this drug will let you drink as much as you like and not get drunk. I mean, it would turn you into a French person. It would be...
Isn't that fantastically dangerous? So you can drink as much as you like, but you don't experience the feeling of getting drunk. Isn't that all that saves our internal organs from total destruction? Because the only reason, in the end, we black out so we can't get to the bar, don't we? That is, you know, and then there's the hangover, which is nature's helpful premonition of death. These are all protective things. But what I didn't understand about the research, as I understand it, they tested it on the worms to see if the worms became alcohol tolerant, didn't they? If the worms stopped displaying the symptoms of being drunk. I mean, how would you know if a worm wasn't drunk? What would the symptoms be? He can't fall over, he can't pick a fight, he can't repeat the same anecdote over and over again. And if he's one of those quiet drunks, you know, he goes very quiet. Again, how would you know if a worm... Oh, that worm's gone quiet. He must be.
In a way, worms are quite like extremely drunk people
they
to
are,
start
yeah,
with. Now, isn't it to do with the way they sort of crawl?
Yeah, they wriggle less from side to side and they've, I don't know, started eating chips with curry sauce. Do you not think this must have come up? I mean, using genetic engineering to make a worm that can't get drunk is the sort of thing that the scientists must have come up with when they were totally hammered.
Yeah. I think it'd be lethal. I think it'd be absolutely lethal if you could give people a drug so that they could get drunk and not feel drunk, because you need that moment where your brain says, all right, sir, I think you've had enough. Why don't you lie down in this nice, cosy gutter?
Doesn't get drunk, you could actually have a live one in a bottle of tequila inside, tapping on the glass going, come on, look at me, nothing. A team at the University of Texas's College of Natural Sciences and Wagoner Center for Alcohol and Addiction Research have inserted a modified human gene into a worm to make it immune to alcohol. Lead scientist Professor Pierce Shimomura said that the research could lead to a James Bond style drug that would allow a spy to drink their opponent under the table and then steal their typewriter. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they would like to share?
This has been sent in by Jeff Kirk, and it's from the Irish Independent on the 3rd of June, and it's an interview with John Wade, a retired fire station officer from Galway, who says, I took early retirement 4.5 years ago from the fire service because I didn't want to get to the stage where I was burned out.
Any more for any more?
I've got one from Jamie Searle. It's a news item from Radio York, I think. A father and son have been rescued from the River Foss in the early hours of this morning. Police were urgently called to reports of screaming coming from the River Foss near the castle car park, where they found two men waist-deep in water, holding takeaway food above their heads.
Sandy, this is from Monday's New York Times website, and it's sent in by Cynthia Penny from New York. And it's the weather. And it says, this evening, thunderstorms will bring pelting downpours. Not only that, but there is a 100% chance of Monday until midnight.
Ms. Front.
This one was sent in by Jason Dunshaw, and it's from the Mail Online. Poltergeist that mysteriously trashed US couple's home turns out to be meth addict who is hiding under the bed with a knife.
Let's take a look at the final score. David and Andy have got 13 points, but this week's winners are Jeremy and Rebecca with 14. Before we leave you, here is some advice spotted by Bernard Walsh on a label from a stick of deodorant.
To get the most out of this product, push up bottom.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were David Mitchell, Andy Hamilton, Jeremy Harvey and Rebecca Front. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Diana Speed. The chair script was written by Benjamin Partridge, Gareth Quinn and Lucy Clark, with additional material by Sarah Morgan, Gabby Hutchinson-Crouch and Max Davis. The producer was Lindsay Fenner.